people are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
On February 13th, President Obama submitted a new budget to Congress. It included $4 trillion in long-term deficit reduction measures and a 3.2% increase in funds for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, totaling nearly $45 billion. Hi, I'm Joanne Green. Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast from Eden Housing, where today's topic is the new federal budget and its impact on affordable housing. My guest is Ali Solis, Senior Vice President and Public Policy and Corporate Affairs Executive for Enterprise Community Partners. Enterprise was founded in 1982 by the legendary urban visionary Jim Rouse and his wife Patty. Their goal was to ensure that every American lives in a decent, affordable home. Today, Enterprise is a leading provider of capital and expertise for affordable housing throughout the U.S. Ali develops and advocates policies to advance the development of affordable housing and sustainable communities within the administration, Congress, state, and local policy stakeholders. In 2008, she led the Save America's Neighborhoods campaign, a cross-industry task force of more than 100 national organizations that got $4 billion in the Housing and Economic Recovery Act to stabilize communities in the foreclosure crisis. She played a key role in creating the National Community Stabilization Trust to facilitate transfer of foreclosed and vacant residential properties from financial institutions and government entities to qualified local housing development partners. Welcome, Ali.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you?
I'm doing well. Ali, we all know that HUD has taken some serious cuts over the past few years. Does the increase in this new proposed budget mean that programs aren't being cut as deeply as they were in previous years? My fingers are crossed.
You know, Joanne, it's an interesting mixed bag, unfortunately, in the president's budget. I wish I could say that it meant that the increase is going to be really reflected in funding level increases for the programs that we all care about. Several programs did receive some minor increases. But when you sort of look at the entire picture here and the projections, just given the deficit and the current fiscal environment that we're facing, we believe that, in fact, many, many programs are likely to receive significant cuts in this year unless we can really move the Congress to act differently.
So can you just give me a couple of examples of programs that you feel might receive serious cuts?
Well, let's look starting with last year. So, you know, a very important program to many housing and community development practitioners around the country was the HOME program. It was the subject of several negative media articles, and as a result, received a 38% cut in last year's funding. This year, the president's budget, which we all know is usually kind of the high watermark, starts the program in its request at $1 billion. So it is sort of level funding, which likely means that the Congress will only reduce those funding levels as it moves through this process. Another critical program to the work we do is the Project-Based Rental Assistance Program. That is slated to receive $1 billion shortfall for existing contracts. So, you know, those two programs in particular in this proposal cause us, you know, great alarm for what may lie ahead.
And then in terms of the programs that have actually received increases, are those less significant? Are they a series of smaller increases? Is there anyone that's really getting a boon here?
No, I wouldn't suggest that any of these are getting booms. There are some programs that have fared moderately well, including the Section 202 Housing for the Elderly program, for example, or housing counseling programs in the president's budget come in at a higher level. And some of the new priority programs that this administration has included in their requests over the years, including the Sustainable Communities program and Choice Neighborhoods, just to name two kind of administration priority programs, received increases in the president's proposal.
As you know, California is especially challenged by the elimination of redevelopment agencies, which were providing nearly $1 billion a year for affordable housing. Is there anything in the president's proposal that could help alleviate that loss of funding for new construction and preservation?
It's a great question. Tenant-based vouchers are most commonly referred to as Section 8 or housing choice vouchers. These vouchers actually go to low-income families, and they can be used to rent housing within the private market. There, the tenant pays about 30% of their income towards rent, and the rest is paid to the landlord through this voucher account system. Project-based vouchers are different. There, it is a contract between the owners of the low-income housing and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The owners agree to rent their units to income-eligible tenants and then charge them 30% of their income towards rent. The government then pays the rest of the tenant's rent up to a certain amount. So that is sort of the two distinctions between what are described as tenant-based vouchers and project-based vouchers.
Is HUD planning to cut both of the programs?
Well, the tenant-based rental assistance is a slight decrease from the renewals of last year's funding level, so there is a small cut. However, they propose in the president's budget to make that up by increasing minimum rents, by simplifying the administration of deductions, that is the way they calculate these rents, and by reducing the frequency of the number of inspections that they're going to have. So while there's a shortfall, they don't anticipate significant impacts as a result of the decrease in funding that's proposed. For project-based rental assistance, unfortunately, the story is quite different. There is as much as $1.5 billion of funding that is going to be needed to renew all the existing contracts. And the president's budget has a shortfall of funding for this important program. Now, they propose to make some of that up through oversight of market rent studies, through a cap of annual subsidy increases for certain properties, and through a variety of administrative reserve techniques where they plan to sweep up excess reserves to offset the payments to the landlords. But we have real concerns about the cuts to the project-based rental assistance program.
Allie, how will these cuts impact tenants who have Section 8 vouchers or who live in housing with Section 8?
In the short term, it is our hope, and I think Congress will do all that it can to keep existing tenants with vouchers in place. I think there's sufficient funding, particularly on the tenant-based voucher program, to ensure that those folks are able to stay living where they are. The challenges with the project-based proposal are that we are concerned that investors and lenders will begin to lose confidence. This is the first time that the government will have, officially sort of short-funded contracts. And there's concern that lenders will lose confidence in the ability of these housing owners to meet their debt service obligations. And that would have, significant repercussions, because the way the project-based voucher program works is that it really relies on investment through the low-income housing tax credit and other programs that are supported by investors and lenders. And it's worked because there's been this, contract. There's sort of they can count on those funds coming in from the government to make up the difference between what the tenant can afford to pay and what the market rent is for the particular unit. So if, funds are not replenished in fiscal year 2014, that is, if they can't make up this funding, there is a significant potential that 1.3 million families, 53% of those are elderly or disabled, could face losing their homes. And so, it's significant concerns about the impact that this might have over time.
On tenants, on landlords, on everybody, right?
That's correct.
Allie, public housing accounts for a significant share of HUD's budget. Can you provide an overview of the budget proposals for public housing? And again, what those impacts would be on tenants?
Sure. The president's proposal restores some of the $750 million in a one-time savings that was impacted in last year's budget request. But even with such savings, there's still a 5% potential cut for the Public Housing Operating Fund. The Public Housing Capital Fund received a slight increase above the 2012 level and is funded at $2.7 billion. One of the interesting proposals that's included is a proposal to consolidate these accounts, that is converting both the public housing operating and capital funds into a single funding stream.
Are there any new programs in the budget? It's hard to imagine why the administration would introduce new programs when some of the old ones are taking such huge cuts.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There are no new initiatives proposed in this budget. However, when the administration really came in a few years ago, there were several new programs included in the HUD budget. And some of those have been funded and some haven't. So while there are no new initiatives, there continues to be priority administration initiatives included in this budget request, such as sustainable communities, the Choice Neighborhood programs, just to name a couple.
The president also made proposals for the Treasury budget that impact affordable housing. In California, this is particularly true, of course, for the low-income housing tax credit, the program that produces nearly 15,000 units a year. Can you briefly discuss the four proposals that would change the tax credit program?
Yes, and I'm going to do my best to try to make it not be too wonky, but there are, as you suggest, four proposals included to modify and expand the housing credit in the president's request. The first, actually, there are two that are really enhancements of last year's proposals that were included in the president's budget. The first is an income averaging proposal that allows developers, low-income housing tax credit developers, to provide units at deeper income levels, that is to target more deeply and be able to serve populations, you know, lower income populations, but it provides flexibility to also serve higher income populations. The low-income housing tax credit program right now is tapped at 60% of area median income. This proposal would allow developers to serve populations up to 80% of AMI as long as the project average is at 60%. That's a proposal that was included last year. The enhancement this year included in the president's request allows additional flexibility on rent requirements for existing tenants. It makes it easier to use the housing credit to finance rehab projects, and it provides an average income targeting on a project basis rather than on an individual building basis. And for those that are developers, this is, you know, intended to make it a lot easier to execute this program. The second is the basis boost for the preservation of low-income housing tax credits. This proposal lays out how states can provide a 30% basis boost for certain projects within particular designations. The enhancement included in the proposal allows states to carry forward the basis boost capacity for 5 years. So it expands the amount of time that they can have this basis boost capacity. Two new proposals included. One is the increase investment by expanding housing credit benefits to REITs, Real Estate Investment Trust. REITs would now be able to provide a tax-exempt designation to a portion of the dividends distributed to shareholders. And if the REIT does not have significant earnings, it can carry forward this designation indefinitely. What that means in layman's terms is that it allows, you know, new investors to come into the low-income housing tax credit, these from the REIT community. The last proposal is called Providing Domestic Violence Protections in Housing Credit Projects. And this allows women that have been victims of domestic violence to have certain protections that would allow them to live in housing credit buildings.
There's one other important change for the tax credit program that Enterprise has been working on that makes a 9% tax credit a 9% credit instead of a lower amount. Can you provide an overview of that proposal and its status?
Sure, yes. And since July of last year, the Affordable Rental Housing Action Campaign, which represents a broad industry coalition of, you know, well over 500 local organizations across the states, many of which are represented in the state of California, have asked Congress to enact permanent minimum rates of 9% and 4% for allocated housing credits and to protect and preserve the housing credit through any deficit reduction or tax reform proposals that are on the table. In December, the House and Senate did introduce bipartisan legislation that would make permanent the 9% and 4% credit rates. And this campaign has really been educating members of Congress across the country to help get that legislation passed, which in this environment is a bit challenging. But I'm pleased to say that the administration, along with a bipartisan group of members of Congress, are working to try to enact this legislation.
So the next step is that the budgets go to Congress. Do you have any sense of what's likely to come back from the House and Senate?
I think if I had a crystal ball, I would be a very rich woman. But I will say this, where we are right now in this process is that the budget committee will begin its negotiations and will begin allocating those 302B allocations, which inside Washington jargon means each of the subcommittees will get their piece of the overall appropriations pie. This year, Enterprise and our partners across the country are really focusing on the budget process as opposed to just the appropriations process, which is sort of generally what funds the overall budget, because it's really important for us to grow the pie for the overall transportation and housing subcommittee. And so we're hoping that we can join with our friends on the transportation industry to demand that Congress really provide sufficient resources to fund both the key critical programs at the Department of Transportation and those within the Department of Housing and Urban Development as well. That process is underway. The appropriators will begin holding hearings as they normally do. But, you know, let's not forget, it is an election year. So it is very unlikely, given both the challenged partisan environment in the Congress and the fact that it's an election year, that we will see individual appropriations bills moving through the House and Senate. We are likely going to be facing a continuing resolution when the government needs to fund its programs at the end of September.
Tough to remain optimistic.
It is, but I also believe this community has come together during very difficult times and, you know, has done an amazing thing. So we've got a lot of work to do, but I'm confident that with the right advocacy and education, we will be able to sustain some of these important programs.
Allie, I'd love to send our listeners to your website for more information about the budget or the tax credit proposals. Where should we direct them?
Two places, I would say. The first is enterprisecommunity.org, www.enterprisecommunity.org. And the second, for those that are really interested in the cross-industry proposals around rental housing in particular and the low-income housing tax credit, I would urge you to go to rentalhousingaction.org and join us in our efforts to enact some important rental housing legislation.
Allie Solis, Senior Vice President, Public Policy, Enterprise Community Partners. Thanks so much for your insights today.
Thank you so much for having me, Joanne.
Certainly. To hear previous episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast or to learn more about Eden Housing, please visit edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.